It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. He joins us every Monday in the 12 o'clock hour, and we appreciate same. Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be with you.
So we finally got the cut by the Fed, 50 basis points instead of 25, which is the norm. Why do you think 50?
I think the Fed was a bit nervous about the direction of the economy. One of the things that Chairman Powell has often said is that Fed rate moves are accompanied by uncertain lags and unpredictable lags. So you don't know how quickly you need to move and how much you need to move in order to prevent a bad outcome. And what he said in his meeting in Jackson Hole is that he felt there was more risk of unemployment than there is of continued inflation. And he may well be right. We have several things that are pushing unemployment. Our auto manufacturers are slowing down dramatically. There's been a real challenge for the automakers, and I'd hate to be in their business right now. EV sales peaked about 8.1% of market. They're trending down. They're about 8% now. They may drop to 7.9%. This is a real challenge because they're being pushed to sell electric vehicles, and the consumer is not wanting them. So inventories are going up. Discounts are increasing, which is great for buyers. But it's not great for factory workers, and all of them are announcing slowdowns in hiring. Some of them have deferred plants, and so it looks like that big auto industry may be a real problem in terms of employment going forward. Some consumer delinquency numbers are ticking up. Unemployment has trended up. It's 4.3% right now, so it's on the upslope. And so the Fed's fear is that we'll get into more unemployment, and they feel like if they haven't beaten inflation, they're pretty close. So I think on balance, with the exception of one Fed governor, they thought, well, let's do 50, and maybe that will help us head off a recession and avoid more unemployment.
But the conversation is not over, right? Because there's talk of a 25 basis point for the remaining each of the remaining two meetings this year in 2024.
Oh, no, you're exactly right. The conversation never ends. I mean, ideally, the Fed wants to get to that magic point where you have a neutral rate that's not stimulating the economy and not shrinking the economy. They don't know where that's going to go. And the Fed is only part of the economy. They're not the biggest part. We talk about them a lot, but the biggest part is the consumer. And then just the fundamental economic health of the U.S. And there are a lot of concerns going forward that there may be more trouble underneath in terms of the fundamental strength. Now, the good thing is we're by far the strongest economy in the world right now. I mean, it's an unusual time. China is absolutely, you know, in the toilet. They're having a terrible economic season right now. Europe is not doing much better. And so we are by far the cleanest dirty shirt, and the Fed wants to maintain that, and rightfully so. And I think, you know, everybody does want to have the U.S. be the best economy. But there are a lot of fundamental challenges. The fiscal challenge is going on. We have a presidential campaign going on with uncertain outcomes depending on who takes over. So the Fed's really anxiously watching what happens. They're not going to get involved in the politics of the election, but they will have to respond based upon whoever gets elected and whatever economic plans are put forth.
Let's pivot to housing. You and I have talked about this a lot. A lot of folks are very curious of the impact on housing. I would remind folks that the mortgage rates got as low as 3% during 2020 and 2021. At the present time, I think where they before this cut, they were over six percent. Yeah, about 6.2%, if my memory serves me correct. Folks believe that this rate will drop these rates down to, what, 5.5, somewhere around there, I guess. Your feeling on that, Guy?
They do, and it's interesting because if we were in a normal cycle, they would. And the reason I say that is over the long run, if you take the 10-year Treasury and add 1.7%, that's generally your 30-year mortgage. The 10-year Treasury right now is 3.7. You add 1.7 to that, and you get 5.4. So you would think, okay, 5.4, that should be the rate right now. The challenge is the Fed doesn't control the long-term rates, and they don't control expectations. And what mortgage buyers are saying is, we believe you're going to push the short-term rate down. We see that, and we have confidence you'll keep doing it. But we don't believe you can push the long-term rate down because the long-term expectation is for more inflation and more bonds to be issued. And it's a classic supply-demand dilemma. If you're issuing too many bonds, then you're going to have to pay more for the bonds. So the mortgage rate normally would be 5.4, 5.5 with the 10-year Treasury where it is. But bond buyers are saying, you know, we don't know that that's a sensible rate for us to invest for 30 years. And that's a challenge that the Fed can't overcome. They need help from the administration and from Congress in order to restore faith in the long run.
There's also this question, you know, does a lower rate actually make it easier to buy a home? I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting because the dynamic is with lower rates, you bring more homeowners or more home buyers to the market, right? And you get into the whole supply versus demand thing. You increase demand. If the supply's not there, what happens? House prices goes up, correct?
Yeah, and we're in a very difficult time right now. If you go back before the financial crisis of 2008, mortgage rates were in the six, and we had a great mortgage market. I mean, houses were readily available. People were buying and selling. There was a lot of demand and a lot of supply. Since then, we've run into a number of problems. The most significant is we're not building enough homes in America to meet demand. And a lot of that is due to zoning requirements, due to additional regulatory review. And so it's difficult for builders to build as many homes as people want. And as long as you don't have that increased supply, prices will stay up. And the mortgage rate is only one part of the equation for a home buyer. You also have to add insurance, and that is certainly not going down. That's gone up all over America, certainly in the hurricane zone, but also in the fire zone, the earthquake zone, you know, any other risk area you want to pick. And the fundamental cost to build a house has not gone down and is not likely to, because labor costs have gone up and supply costs have gone up. The raw materials that go into building a house are more expensive now than they were 4 years ago. So the chances of a housing boom just because rates are a bit lower, I think, is unlikely. I think we'll see a better housing market, but we need a lot of changes on the supply side in order to make a really sound and good market and to make it affordable for particularly first-time homebuyers to get into a house.
And it's interesting dynamic as to whether or not this 50 and another 25 and another 50 before the end of the year is actually going to be enough to really stimulate the folks to go out and start building starter homes, right? Developers.
Well, and the challenge is, once again, that the Fed can reduce short-term rates. The 10-year rate may not go down. The 30-year rate barely budged when the Fed moved rates down 50 basis points. It only changed about 10 basis points. So if bond buyers don't trust that the U.S. has its fiscal house in order, then the long rates will not go down. And even though the rate for a construction loan for a home builder may be lower, the 30-year mortgage rate is probably somewhere close to about as low as it's going to get. Probably will end up somewhere between 5.5 and 6, but it's not going to get back into the 2s and 3s. There's not a scenario other than a very deep recession or some sort of global crisis that pushes rates down to what were unprecedented low levels that they're just unlikely to come back.
Guy, I guess is there like a psychology to this? You know, I'm sitting here, regular Joe's in a home, maybe is not their dream home. It's an intermediate home, but he's got a 3.1, 3.2% mortgage, and his dream home comes available, and it's looming out there at 5.2 to 5.5. I got to imagine many folks kind of look at that and say, why do I want to go pay more interest, pay more for the home and go pay more interest on the home at this point in time, if they're just not really feeling rock solid about the economy?
Well, and you raise an interesting point, because one of the reasons home building is so important to the economy is there's never a time in your life when you'll spend more money than when you buy a house, because when you buy a house, then you have to buy drapes and, all the things that decorate a house. Your furniture doesn't fit from the old house to the new, typically. You may need new lawn stuff. So there are a tremendous number of expenses, and somebody on the fence is going to look at all those new expenses and say, I'm just not going to do it. And then the insurance burden is a challenge. The property tax burden, we have relatively low property taxes, but in some of the fast-growing states like Texas and Florida, they have very high property taxes. So you're going to face a higher tax. And it has the effect of freezing people in place, which is very unfortunate for the U.S. economy, because traditionally one of the great strengths of our economy was that people would move for a better job. So there was this natural ebb and flow. As jobs increased in one area, people would move to that area and fill those jobs. We're not seeing that as much as we used to, and that really is a problem in economic flexibility. And that's one of the strengths that we used to have that we don't have as much as we did in days past.
Let's flip and pivot next to probably one equally as important for the consumer credit. Do we see anything, significant improvement there as a result of this first 50 and maybe another 50 before January?
No. And unfortunately, with the best of intentions, our government makes it very difficult to lend to consumers. We have the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that is really, really difficult to deal with. And they force lenders to have a uniform model, basically a formula model of how you're going to lend. And based on that model, it's hard to make exceptions and help people that you think, okay, they want to take a chance on them. So we have some regulatory burdens to increase consumer lending. You also have a trend right now. Consumer delinquency is trending up. Consumers not looking as strong as they did just a few months ago. So you have higher delinquency. So when banks factor in the delinquency trend into the risk models, they're not going to extend credit as much as they might have. And then there's also talk, and we have this always in the political season, of rate caps on consumer lending. Well, if there's a rate cap, then marginal borrowers aren't going to get credit. So lenders are looking at that very carefully and saying, I don't really want to get into consumer lending if I might be stuck with a rate cap at some point. So we're doing a lot of things that make it more challenging for the consumer to borrow. And finally, credit cards are almost completely disconnected from prime rate. They just almost never go down. So anyone who has a credit card, if you look at that annual percentage, it just is very sticky. Whatever rate it is, it tends to stay at that rate. And then if you miss a few payments, it actually goes up. But it's very, very slow to come down. So with the exception of auto loans, you're really not likely to see much in the way of a discount in rates. And the auto loans are going to be due to lower cost and also to the manufacturers kicking in money because they have too much inventory right now.
And, Guy, I don't mean to be Debbie Downer on this, but, you know, I'm listening to all the talking heads that are talking about this rate reduction and how much of a stimulus it's going to be to the economy. And you know, and I go to folks like you and others, and you get a more realistic perspective of what this actually means and what it could potentially mean, but not necessarily saying this is the path that we're going. But when you're hearing, you know, all of these candidates talking about this, that, and otherwise, I mean, the picture's so rosy, I feel like I just hit the lottery. And the intellectual side of my head is telling me this is BS in many respects. Your thoughts?
Well, it just reminds me, we had a particularly ill-timed G&O Inc. meeting where right before COVID, our slogan was the future is so bright you need to wear sunglasses. And we passed out sunglasses, and then COVID occurred. So, yeah, you have to be careful when you're looking at that bright future. One of the challenges is that lower rates are good for some people, bad for others. For people that are savers, now you're getting a lower rate on CDs. And, you know, as a bank, we encouraged people all of last year to go long, to buy longer-term CDs, to ladder their maturities so they had something that was, you know, 3, 4, 5 years long. But consumers really dislike long-term investments. And the vast majority of consumers kept their CD investments short. They're actually going to see a decrease in income now. So there's a positive for some folks, but there's a negative for other folks. And people on fixed incomes that had CDs are going to see a decline in rates. The other thing is, if you listen carefully, the reason the Fed cut rates 50 basis points is that they're nervous about the job market. They feel that the risk is greater to higher unemployment than to high inflation, which means people should rightfully be a little bit nervous about jobs, if not your job, somebody else's, that could cut consumer spending. So, yeah, there's some positives to lower rates. It'd be great to get back to where inflation's under control and we don't have to throttle the economy. But there are also some negatives as we begin to lower rates.
And it was also the first time that the Fed, that I've heard in a long time, kind of made the point where a good, sound immigration policy is important, that what has happened over the last 3 years has been problematic and has been contributing to this job and number of folks imbalance that we have at the present time.
Well, it really is true. And one of the really unfortunate things is because of our slow birth rate in the U.S., we absolutely need immigrants. We have a tremendous need for more people to come. And the great thing is people want to come. The unfortunate thing is we're not managing that process well. We need to let people in. I mean, go back to effectively an Ellis Island thing. On my mom's family, they came through Ellis Island, and that was that was just the way people came in. You went through a process, you got approved, and then you worked in America somewhere. There are people all over the world that would really contribute to our economy that we'd love to let in, but we've got it messed up right now, and we need to sort that out. We also are missing an opportunity. There is a spectacular chance to really hurt Vladimir Putin, and that would be to let all of the skilled Russians, the engineers, the the physicians, the doctors, the nurses, the truck drivers, the anybody that has a job and has some skills in Russia that wants to leave, we ought to say, come on down. It would simultaneously help us and hurt them. And it's risk-free. It's painless. But yep. What we have now is just disorganized, and there really is so much room for improvement. I hope we'll get that done once the political season is over.
Yeah, hope springs eternal sometimes, for sure. I'm not so bullish on that happening. It's become a political football that nobody wants to touch any longer. All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. When we come back, we'll talk about the Boeing strike update and the implications of this. Could be huge.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, before we talk about the Boeing strike update, I read somewhere that you guys are expanding into Florida. And I have a suggestion for you that you and I should do a live show on Fridays and Monday from the Panhandle. What do you think?
You know what, Newell? I think that's a fabulous idea. We're planning to have our grand opening this Thursday in Destin. The weather is going to probably put a damper on that and move it to a different date. But the branch is open. The grand opening will be deferred to a future date. But I love the idea of the remote show on Fridays and Mondays.
We'll move the sailboat out there. We'll make it an event, right?
I know. Well, with Starlink, we can do it from the sailboat.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep talking. I'm loving it more and more.
I know, getting better and better.
No, but congratulations to you guys, and a lot of Louisiana folks are out there, and obviously that'll make it a lot more convenient for them. So let's talk about Boeing. This strike is it's huge in many ways and has a lot of implications, right?
It really does, and I feel for Boeing because they're in a world of trouble right now, and it's just hard to imagine how they get out of this. And I'll never forget, I have a good friend who's a labor negotiator, and he once told me, he said, you know, Guy, most companies get the union they deserve. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, if you treat the workers with respect, you typically can negotiate fair deals. If you run roughshod over them, whenever they get a chance, they're going to do the same to you, and it can be really difficult. Well, Boeing has made a lot of bad decisions through the years, and boy, all the chickens are coming home to roost at the absolute wrong time. So if you think about it, Boeing, when they had their last real big negotiation, Boeing was very profitable, and they used the leverage to actually force some concessions on the workers, eliminated the pension. And they used the threat of Airbus competition, and the workers didn't forget. Well, the unfortunate thing is the tables have turned now. Boeing is bleeding cash. They haven't made money in 3 or 4 years. They're negative cash flow. They're under regulatory scrutiny because of the problems with their 737. Airbus is gaining market share every day. And the machinist in Washington State and in Seattle have gone on strike, 33,000 people on strike. And Boeing's challenge is they don't really have the money to pay more. but they also don't have an alternative. And that's an awful situation. You know, what do you do when you have to do one thing and it's awful, and if you don't do it, the alternative is awful? They also set themselves up, you know, just poor thinking. And I don't know what the board was going through in their mind, but in 2023, they gave the CEO a significant increase in pay. So you give a big increase to the CEO, and suddenly the workers remember that, and they look back and they think, well, wait a minute, if you can give the CEO a significant annual increase when you're losing money, then that can't be such a big problem. And the increase, you know, was 45% in 2023. Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. I've never had a 45% pay increase in 1 year. But
neither I.
45%. I know, we need to lobby WWL. Come on. Well, that CEO lost his job and should have. The new CEO, Kelly Ortberg, said, look, we're going to focus hard. We're going to get the planes built. We're going to do what we can. I'm going to move to Seattle. And all those things were good. But in the month before the strike, he bought a $4.8 million house. And it was one of those, what were you thinking? Get the labor deal signed and then buy your house. Because it doesn't matter, you know, that you wait a few months to buy a house. But if you buy a multi-million dollar home, then it's going to be one more log on the fire when the union talks about why they need more money. Because the union members don't have $4.8 million houses. It's like, and he's not a bad guy. He's a good guy. I think he's probably going to be a good CEO, but it's one of those optical things that you just need to think about. You know, the prior CEO got a big bonus.
Let's talk about the impact, though. I mean, you know, obviously there's two major plane manufacturers that service the commercial airline industry, right? Boeing and Airbus. And if you take one out, and if one is less than and is not able to deliver upon the orders that they get, this whole worldwide inventory of planes is toast. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it makes it really difficult for this industry as a whole to really zing, right?
Yeah, and look, the last thing the airlines want is to have only one manufacturer. You know, that's the reason Airbus exists. Once Boeing merged with McDonnell Douglas and became basically the gorilla in the industry, the Europeans said, look, we can't have a situation where the U.S. supplies effectively all the airplanes to the world, which is where Boeing was. So the government subsidized Airbus, got them up and running, and they became a competitor. And they went from essentially no market share to roughly 50-50. The problem is now there's about 60-40 Airbus. And the other problem is Boeing made some bad decisions. When with their Dreamliner, they spent $32 billion to develop it. You know, brand new plane, carbon fuselage, pretty neat airplane. But Airbus spent $3 billion to develop the A330neo, where they just used the old fuselage but put new wings and engines on the plane. And for Airbus, it was a genius move because they were able to use a Rolls-Royce engine that's more efficient than the airplane engines on the 787. So now Airbus has a marketing advantage. It's cheaper to operate the plane, and it's cheaper to buy. So if you're an airline, let's see, wait, I can buy this plane for less money, and it's cheaper every day that I fly it. So they're getting lots of orders, Delta being one of the big suppliers. Virgin, which used to be all Boeing, is now more Airbus than Boeing. So what's happening to Boeing is they're losing market share, and some of it is bad decision-making on their part. Some of it is just unfortunate timing. But now, in the middle of this, their moneymaker, the 737, can't be delivered because it's made in the unionized plants, and 33,000 people are on strike. In the meantime, Boeing employs 130,000 folks. They've told everyone else, look, y'all need to take one unpaid week off every month while we're dealing with this strike. And they're not back in mediation yet. Because once again, Boeing is in that horrible, horrible situation. They offered a 25% pay increase. The union wants 40 plus other concessions. At some point, Boeing's going to have to end this. But it's hard to put more money on the table when you're literally losing money every day. And that's the real challenge that Boeing's facing. And then Textron, which makes Beechcraft and Piper, is threatening to go on strike October 1st. So you could have another 20 or 30,000 people on strike. Same idea, not as stressful as Boeing, but certainly a challenge for the aviation industry.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. I mean, we just had an airline, I think it was Breeze Airways, delay new routes out of New Orleans, Louis Armstrong International Airport, because of access to planes.
And that was really unfortunate, because we lost a direct flight to Las Vegas, and that'd be fun for Saints games when we play against the Raiders, but they can't service that flight without planes. Boeing can't deliver planes when their laborers are on strike, but Airbus can't deliver planes much faster either, because you can't just double and triple airplane production. It's a long, slow ramp up. But unfortunately, the tide is running in Airbus's favor and against Boeing right now, which hurts the U.S. balance of payments, because Boeing used to be one of the great export engines in the American economy.
Yeah, I mean, this has huge implications. It's going to be interesting to see how long they can carry on with this strike, because meanwhile, their financials are plummeting, and it's sometimes you get to that point of no return, right? Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with Guy Williams, Gulf Coast president of president Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, Facebook cloning scam, not part one, but part two. We're at it again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Was with a group of realtors and heard a really terrible story. So before I get into it, I want to tell people, if you have a Facebook account, go to privacy settings and set your friends list so that they can only be seen by you. This isn't going to affect anything, but it will make a big difference. This realtor sold a wonderful house, really proud, big commission, did the posting, look at this wonderful house I sold, and rightfully so, great job. But he had not updated his privacy settings. And so a crook cloned his Facebook account. Now, you don't have to have a password to clone an account. You just scrape all the public information and you create a fake account. And then you take all of those friends who are not private, because you haven't updated the privacy settings, and 90% of the people haven't, and you send them a note, and you say, I am so happy I sold this big house. I'm taking my dream vacation to Australia, but good news for my friends. The buyers don't like the appliances. They don't want KitchenAid. They want to get the German appliances. They don't like the Wolf stove. They want to get a different stove. And it included a link with all these different high-level appliances that were in the house, the specifications, and said, the sellers were so happy with the great job I did, they're letting me sell these at 10% of their original cost. Just DM me, let me know if you want, and I'll hold it for you, because I'm about to go on this long-awaited vacation. Well, people were thrilled. People that wanted a KitchenAid or a special refrigerator, a special ice maker, special whatever, were sending messages. It looked like it was from him. It looked like his page. His picture was there. It was coming from him on Facebook. The crooks got deposits. Oh, just send a deposit, just $300, $500, whatever, on these great appliances. And then, as soon as people sent that, they'd charge a delivery fee. Okay, we're ready. We'll schedule the deliveries. I'm in Australia, so I'm not going to be able to respond, but this is just going to be a hold for my return. Long story short, dozens of people sent money. It was a complete and total scam. He wasn't on vacation. When people started calling him in real life, it was like, how do I deal with this? Tried to respond, tried to get through to Facebook, zero luck on that. Mark Zuckerberg did not take his phone calls. And he's alienated all of his friends, all the ones who sent in money, because they think it was his fault. And in a way, it sort of is, because he didn't update his privacy settings. But it could happen to anybody. And it was a clever use of all of the things that were real. Australia was his dream vacation. He did sell this beautiful house. It did have these wonderful appliances. But obviously, the buyers were not selling them at 10% of cost. And so for want of updating privacy settings, he really alienated a lot of people.
You know, there are moments in my life, Guy, that I begin to wonder whether some of this technology in the end is truly worth it. I mean, you spend more time trying to insulate yourself and protect yourself from folks that want to penetrate your kind of tech bubble for nefarious reasons, that you wonder whether or not it's even that important to stay connected. You ever feel that way? You're in an industry where you got to be on top of that 24/7, you know, 7 days a week.
Oh, we're watching it constantly. But interestingly, in studies, younger Americans are saying that they're increasingly convinced that social media is not worthwhile. Because it just has gotten out of control. Too many scams, too much promotion of, you know, just irrationality and bad behavior. And things like this, you know, it would be hard. You could see how somebody could easily fall for it.
You got a couple of texts here.
Forever, and now you can get it for very little.
Got a couple of texts here. People said they've already changed their settings. So what do they do when they go to privacy settings again?
Make their friend list visible only to themselves. You click friend on the list. Little picture of yourself on the Facebook icon, go to privacy settings, and then who can see your friend list? Only you.
Only you. Guy Williams, as always, this hour flies by. We truly appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great weekend. Let's work on that show from the Panhandle.
I agree. Work on the Destined remote.
There you go. Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Have a great week.
You too. Thanks.
We will be right back, folks. Ian is in for Scoot. We'll check in with Ian when we return. Ian Hoke's in for Scoot. What do we have coming up, Ian?
Good afternoon, Newell. I think this is going to be a fun one. We'll talk a little bit about PolitiFact and Snopes and how we use them to sometimes fact-check politicians. Well, believe it or not, sometimes those services can do more harm than good. We'll talk to Dan Frumkin. He's the editor of Press Watch in a couple minutes. We're going to talk about street racing in New Orleans, those street takeovers. Nobody likes those. They're dangerous. They're obnoxious. But there is an organization in town that's trying to professionalize street racing so everybody can enjoy it. And then I'm really looking forward to asking, which regional jail has the best food?
Ian's headed your way with a great lineup. Stay tuned, folks. Hope you had a great day.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.